It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Las Vegas has become one of the most exciting culinary cities in the world, and some of the most innovative ideas are coming from chefs and restaurateurs who actually grew up here. Joe Mikulich, he is co-founder of EDO Hospitality, the restaurant group behind acclaimed dining spots, EDO Tapas, Anima by EDO, Brasseria by EDO, and La Loba. And now he was born and raised in Las Vegas. His journey reflects the evolution of the city's dining scene itself. After launching his culinary career at Holstein's, he spent a decade honing his craft at Bazaar Meat by Jose Andres, one of the Strip's most celebrated restaurants. Today, Joe oversees operations and wine programs for the EDO Hospitality portfolio while continuing to push creative boundaries with his partners. Their newest concept, Brasseria by EDO, blends French favorites, Spanish staples, a vibrant cold bar, and even chartreuse on draft, bringing bold, border-free flavors to the growing dining destination known as Restaurant Row, just steps from the Las Vegas Strip. We'll talk about growing up in Las Vegas, building a restaurant group in one of the most competitive food cities in the world, and what it takes to keep innovating in a town that never stops dining. And for everything about Brasseria, go to brasseriabyedo.com, and you can follow them on Instagram. And Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Okay, the most important question, I'm sure it's never been asked, is what does EDO stand for?
So EDO has an interesting story. It stands for Extra Day Off. How we came up with that name. Yeah, we joke about it now because none of us have an extra day off.
Absolutely. You don't have an hour off, so yeah.
No. How it came about was we wanted our first name of our EDO, the restaurant, first restaurant, to be a word that the industry kind of related to. And there's always a good feeling of having planned to go to work, but then, you know, whether you know, the restaurant is slower or they overstaff, you get a text message or a phone call from your manager and it says, hey, you know, we're taking cuts today. Does anyone want the day off? And you get that day, you have no plans aside because you thought you were going to work. So you kind of have this free day. So that feeling of a free day was kind of how it came about.
I always thought it was something very sophisticated, but clearly it's just an industry term, so it worked out fine. So yep. The important thing one of the things I want to talk to you about before we talk about the restaurants themselves and the newest one that I mentioned, Brasseria, but the fact that you grew up in Las Vegas and you decided somehow as a masochist to get into this business.
Restaurants, everyone talks about it. Everyone knows, you know, it's a very hard business to get into and to succeed in. And we're no different. It's definitely a lot of work. It's a labor of love, but I genuinely enjoy this hospitality world. It's done a lot for me. It's opened up crazy avenues. Some of my best experiences have been at a dining table with friends and family. And I love Las Vegas, so I wanted to just be a bigger part of that with my group. And now it's expanding to be something even cooler, so it's been a blessing.
Well, are you one of those guys that actually started from the bottom? What I mean by that is, were you doing dishes? Were you cleaning up? All that kind of stuff? Or did you kind of hit middle management level first?
No, I definitely started from the beginning. So I went to UNLV. I went to hospitality school there. Did some soccer growing up. I played soccer my entire life, played a little bit at UNLV. And then as soon as I graduated, I traveled a little bit and got back into Las Vegas and started working in restaurants as a busser, a food runner. You know, I think I started at Holstein's when it opened the Cosmo as a food runner and kind of worked my way up into serving. As soon as Bazaar opened, I got an amazing job offer to become a server there, and then became a sommelier. So always front of the house, never dishwasher, but always on the front of house, hit all the different positions.
Well, I think it's always good to have some experience in as a dishwasher as well, because it really shows you the beginning stages of the restaurant all the way up through management and ownership. So you really get a full view. But I'm clearly, with your experience, you know what that's like, even without having necessarily do it.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, there's definitely been days when I've been a dishwasher, especially at our restaurants. You know, off strip, we're small business, so we joke about like we wear all the hats. There's definitely been days where something happens, someone calls out, or you know, unplanned, and I've definitely did wash dishes with my chefs before.
How does that work with you on the level of to get into the restaurant business? As we talked about, it's hard, and there are some chefs. Not necessarily owners, but chefs who have an ego, et cetera. But as a restaurateur, which I'll use that term for you, and a co-founder of restaurants, you almost have to put an ego aside because, as you said, if somebody calls out sick, you got to take over that job unless you can find someone else to do it. So there's a certain humbling experience to it all, isn't it?
Definitely. I mean, working with Jose Andres was obviously a great experience. But way different, you know. Jose is so established and a personality, and has this big financial backing. So, you know, now the world of Bazaar, you know, no one's going to task him with doing those things. But I guarantee, in his first few restaurants, he's gone through those processes before, whether it was in Spain or here, his first few restaurants in the States. But yeah, you definitely have to balance that. You know, Las Vegas is an interesting market where we have this beautiful Las Vegas Strip with all these celebrity chefs, but you go off the Strip, no one's like that. That's not like the case at all. Everyone is, we're small businesses. We have to kind of humble ourselves and like I said, wear all these different hats. There's plenty of days where you don't get to be like this creative celebrity chef and you're just sitting down, you know, making French fries for someone that's, you know, lives in Summerlin and their kid wants French fries. That's just the case. It's how it goes.
Why did you decide to put Edio Brasseria on the Strip as opposed to, or off the slightly a couple steps from the Strip, as opposed to somewhere else? In other words, you are competing. It's not just the competition, frankly, it's the cost.
Yep. So how it worked out, when we opened up our first restaurant, Edio, that was located in Chinatown, maybe 2-3 miles off the Strip. And it was a good location for us because we were able to attract a lot of the local following, but then we were close enough to where if we did well, got some good awards, got some good recognition, people that were touring the Strip from wherever for conventions or for vacation, they could venture to us. EDO, however, was way too small. It was great for us to start, but it was only 38, 39 seats. So we kind of hit a cap on what was possible filling those seats wise. And we always wanted to expand in that location. To the next door restaurant, but it never happened. This restaurant never closed down and we weren't able to expand. So we made a decision to close it. It's going to eventually be moving in the next few months. Actually, we started the build last month on the new location. So probably in August, that will open as a slightly different concept, but still EDO. Then we opened up Anima. Anima is located at the Gramercy off of 215 in Russell. So much more in the residential area of Las Vegas, where a lot more families still can come. And it's a much bigger parking lot, much nicer space, less of that party atmosphere up in the Southwest. And that's been amazing for us. And crazily enough, we still get a good amount of tourism coming that knows the group, knows the brand, to Anima, which has been amazing. That's almost 5 years old now. The reason why we opened up on Paradise, we've always been keen on that location, mostly because of the architecture of the building is incredible. And it was always a fun spot for my partner, Roberto. I don't know if you know that, familiar with that location, but it was a restaurant called Yoli's. It was a Brazilian steakhouse. My partner's Brazilian, so he always had like a love for that place. But we just couldn't come to an agreement with the owners of that shopping center on the deal. Until you know the last few years, we finally agreed on something. But the reason why we wanted to go there, EDO was too small for large group tourism to come. Anima was almost a little bit too far away. And I would, year after year, we'd get all these inquiries for these large parties, these big pieces, you know, these big groups that wanted to come. And we just couldn't accommodate them. It was impossible for either of those reasons. And a lot of tourism comes with big groups. They want to, you know, celebrate large parties and things like that. So it was almost like we were missing opportunities there. Coming to Brasseria, it's about 200 seats, more or less, we can fit in there once we get the patio all done. So right now it's like 140. Now we have the ability, the space of a bigger private dining room, a bigger floor where we can accommodate large groups, and it's so much closer to the Strip. So our idea is to, you know, when we get all these inquiries, try and funnel them to Brasseria because it's just so much more approachable and so much more accommodating.
Are you at that stage because you're one of the co-founders that you're driving around to all your different restaurants all the time, checking on things?
Brasseria is only a month old. So it's going to take some time to mature and figure out SOPs and define clearly what roles and who's good at what.
For those who may not know standard operating procedure.
Yes. Sorry.
I just wanted for people that are listening or watching me not know what the term means. Okay.
Sure. And we're getting there. My partner and I, we've been blessed with the ability to now have managers under us. We're kind of separating ourselves from the line level managers and dictating what the managers do. And rather than doing both, it gets very tricky and hard there. But we're getting very close there, especially now that we're building this new EDO concept. We're able to not have to close the restaurant down every day. I can bounce around. Like, for example, I literally just got back from Seattle. Our restaurant in Seattle at the One Hotel, I was there for this entire week, and the team was able to handle all the restaurants without me there. And now today I'm back and I'll bounce between the two restaurants. So yes.
You mentioned EDO as almost an insider. Well, it is an insider term. So I'm always wondering how that looks from the consumer side, the people that the public that comes, because you could have done EVO as opposed to EDO, you know, and
totally.
They would know that concept. But do you get people that come in and say, what does that stand for? Or
All the time. Okay. You know, we kind of joke about it too, that we do a great job of making very confusing names. The amount of times that Anima has been botched, my entire family still calls it Enema. So
I'm tripping over the names here even, but yeah. my audience knows it's pollen time. So I'm forgiven a little bit of mispronunciation, including, I think I said Brasseria, but you're calling it Brasserias with two S's in a way. Like
exactly. Think of like a French brasserie.
Yeah.
So that's where we get the name from. Okay.
Well, I'll correct it as we go. So I did. You were nice enough not to correct me as I first pronounced it, but it was close enough. For you, I guess. So it worked out. For
we make the craziest names, and sometimes, you know, we're like, man, we got to really pull back and make just something a little less sophisticated or in a different language.
Have you thought maybe like In and Out? People understand.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. Oh, that's taken. Never mind. Don't do that. Okay. So when you decided to put together the menu and the presentation, as I alluded to, the kind of the blending of various types of cuisines for Brasseria, what was the process for that? How did you guys sit down and go, okay, here's what I want to do. It's a little bit different, but since nobody knows what EDO stands for, let's make this really complicated as a cuisine.
Yeah, we definitely make things complicated, but here where the reasoning is, you know, I'm not taking jabs at any of these places, but where I've come from, where my partners come from, our chef team coming from the Strip, we love restaurants where it's a little bit more adventurous, a place where you go to dine, and of course you're going to get full and have a good experience, but you might learn something on the way there that the staff tells you, or an ingredient you've never heard of, or a cuisine that you've never really, you know, dabbled into. We're just as a culture, we're not, you know, there's a lot of people that have never traveled to Spain, to France. And we wanted to create restaurants where you might get a taste of those places, but, you know, here in Las Vegas. How Brasseria came about, when we were in the middle of Anima, and Anima's up and running, and we get this deal with One Hotel in Seattle, we were kind of stretched pretty thin where, you know, we're opening up this hotel, you know, a handful of hundreds of miles away. We needed the flexibility and the ability to bring on a team that could handle that with us, still maintain our restaurants and the plans to come. We were blessed with, if you're familiar with the restaurant on the Strip, by Joel Robuchon and L'Atelier, mm-hmm. Arguably two of the best restaurants on the Strip that are French. We were approached by a couple of friends there that worked there. Chef Taden Elamar, he was the executive chef of L'Atelier, and he'd worked there for a handful of years. He was ready to move on and do something bigger, with us off Strip. And we came to an agreement. It was like, hey, come join us. We have plans for a French restaurant. You would be a perfect fit. So he was working with us well before Brasseria came about because we knew that we were going to do that. But he was able to go with me to Seattle and bounce around. As soon as he joined, in the months to come, the year to come, a handful of his other staff from that restaurant, all French trained, came with us also. And it gave us the ability to like set, make this Brasseria menu very, very easily. Because they really enjoy and they know French technique. They've been doing it at, a significantly higher level and higher price point. But they were able to make it in a much more approachable format for Brasseria. So that's where the Brasseria came about. We always like French cuisine. And there's a handful of French restaurants in the city, but we wanted to do our own, we wanted to do our own style.
Why is it you don't look exhausted?
That's funny. Restaurants are tough. I think being an athlete, I've always put at the forefront, my health, and I definitely, don't get as much sleep as I could. I work, way too many hours, but, I always try and prioritize health and eating healthy. I don't really drink that often. Even being a sommelier, I'm probably the most sober sommelier in the city. just cause I don't have the time to go out and, have a bottle of wine every single night. Like, when I work on the Strip, it's very easy to get into these routines and vices of Las Vegas. There's great things about Vegas, but there's also some pretty bad things. And the availability of gambling and alcohol and all these things is very relevant. It's very there.
Well, you could elevate it, gambling and fine wine as opposed to
of course.
Alcohol. Yes. Well, tell us a little bit about the sommelier experience. Why did you decide to go down that route or route at a certain point, as opposed to doing everything else that you do and within that restaurant world?
Yep. So when I was going to UNLV, I really had no idea what I wanted to do for a career. Soccer was my life. That's all I cared about. And, I didn't know what route I wanted to go. I was talking to my, athletic advisor and, I literally asked him, I remember, what is UNLV good at, with regards to degrees? If I'm going to get a degree, I might as well get it, one of the best that our school offers. That was literally the level of like, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was an open book. I was open to anything. And he's like, man, obviously we're good at hospitality with the Strip being right behind us. Like, I'll go that route. If I like it, great. So with that degree, it opened up plenty of opportunities for me, making connections, working on the Strip. Was pretty easy for me to get hired. So I started, like I said, as a busser runner, but whenever I would go to restaurants and get way more into fine dining or just dining in general and caring about food and, what you put in your body. I went to a restaurant for restaurant week, Three Squares Restaurant Week, because I was still, poor college student. So that's a discounted way to taste some good food.
that's true.
Yeah. And I,
for our viewers and listeners outside of Las Vegas, Three Square is a food or a nonprofit food organization that distributes food to people who need the food. And part of that is every year they have Restaurant Week where you can go to these great restaurants at a reasonable price. And a lot of the proceeds then go to Three Squares, just so people know what we're talking about here. So, yes, I could see you as a college student saying, well, hey, this is one way to do it. Or I could
say, So how it happened was, I went to this restaurant and, just while dining, I noticed this, this gentleman walking through the restaurant suited, looking pretty dapper. And he kind of demanded a little bit of respect. And honestly, I thought that he was a general manager of the restaurant, but still he was had a cool swagger about himself.
A certain formality as well.
Totally. Totally. He demanded, he had the staff coming up to him. He was also pouring wine, obviously. So I was just curious. I think I was very young. I was probably 19 at the time. And, I literally just asked him, I was like, hey, who are you? What is your duties here? And I had never heard of the term sommelier. Right. I joke about it, but I've told people he kind of reminded me of the James Bond of a restaurant, dapper, kind of suave. And, I chatted with him for a second. He's like, oh, I'm in charge of serving wine in this restaurant. I'm in charge of the wine program. And I'm like, what? That's a career. And he's like, yeah, it's great in Las Vegas, especially, we have all this tourism and you can open up some cool wines and stuff. I was like, this sounds amazing. So I literally from then on, I tried to go down the rabbit hole of what is the sommelier, how to study it, how to test for it. And then I became a server eventually and I always had this passion for beverage. and started just going down the Quartermaster Sommelier and taking all the correct tests. There's another one called WSET, which I went down that rabbit hole too. So I got a handful of certifications under my belt. And then I, once Bazaar opened and I passed my correct level two to become certified, the opportunity came to become a sommelier. And then I just went through the ranks up that way.
You have a certain drive you don't see in everybody. Where did that come from?
My parents raised me incredibly well. I was blessed with, you know, two parents in my life that cared the world for me and my sister and instilled great values. Sports were always my number one. Growing up over education, it was always kind of sports and then education. And I think I learned through that just a lot of determination and drive. And I associated success with working hard, going above and beyond and with training. And then I found that on the soccer field. So when I got out of soccer, it was a very easy understanding. I just had to shift what I was the goal, right? So studying with and learning finances and learning business and becoming a leader that way wasn't easy, obviously, but it was definitely a smoother transition to get into that. And now, you know, I'm still the same way. There's nothing's changed with that.
So if I go into EDO Brasseria, will I trip over a soccer ball?
No, zero.
Okay. Just want to check to make sure about that. Okay.
No balls there.
Okay. But you still have an interest in soccer, clearly. So when you get a chance, do you play it?
I don't play on a league right now. I still work out all the time. It's just kind of shifted. I run a lot. I'm a yogi now. I got to keep my head right. So yoga is definitely a little bit easier for me to kind of keep my mind straight. The World Cup is coming this year. I plan to go to a handful of games. Couple of trips planned for already, but yeah, soccer is definitely still a big part of my life, no doubt.
And you mentioned yoga too. What about meditation? Do you get a chance to do any meditation?
Or is that
probably
yoga,
probably.
Of course, yeah. You know, there's different forms of yoga. There's the harder one, the Pilates, the things like that. But then there's also it's called Yin, where it's literally just like you in a hot room, and it's like a slow meditative type of stretching. And honestly, that's literally like. I call it like a massage for your brain. It just like gets you so level-headed, calm, you're breathing correctly, and it's much more functional. And that's honestly like probably my favorite class I've ever done.
How do you keep your organizational skills intact? In this sense, you're dealing with several restaurants. They're all over the map. They're mostly in Las Vegas, but obviously one is out of state.
Yep.
So you're always putting out, I would imagine, fires. While the chef is starting a fire to cook, you're putting out fires in other areas of the restaurant, not literal mm-hmm. fires, but you know what I'm talking about. So how is it you are able to stay on top of all that? What is it? It probably is part of the yoga and just the fact that you have that work ethic, but it seems, boy, that's just to me, it'd be overwhelming to try and stay on top of that many things.
Yeah. No, I just turned 35. I'm by no means, a master at this. I love to think that I'm pretty good at it with my partner, but I've also had amazing mentors that have showed me a lot of things and what's right and what's wrong. But there's also, there's a few factors. There's technology that helps a lot now, more than ever, that I definitely am able to, or trying to learn to make my life a little bit easier. But there's a big part of it is just delegation. You know, we're pretty serious on who we hire and making sure that they're a good fit. Or just spending time with new upcoming managers or my team to make sure that we're trusting them enough to delegate and that they do the right things on the smaller tasks. If there's something big that needs to get brought to mine or my partner's attention, obviously it comes up the ladder to us to assist. But a part of it, I definitely had a hard time trying to be okay with not being in control of everything in the restaurant. And that's the only way that we're going to continue to grow. If there's a problem, I trust and delegate my team to be like, hey, I can address this. That doesn't need to go up. That's not that big of an issue that needs more supervision. I trust these guys to make some of those smaller task decisions. And I'm growing now with my partner to make the bigger decisions. So, you have to be able to let go of these small things, and you're not going to win everything every day. And there's better days than others, but that's the only way that we're able to do this, especially in Seattle. You know, we have an entire hotel, an entire team in a different state, in a completely different market. And the only way that happens is that I hire these people and we've trained with them and I trust that they are doing the right thing. And if they're not, then eventually, you know, we'll figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Before I let you go, let's talk a little bit about, because I wanted to get a little bit more of the flavor of EDO Brasseria, or Brasseria, yep, as you corrected me on, or I corrected myself on after hearing you say it correctly. Give us a sense of, you talked a little bit about the people that joined you over there, but it's a mix of French and Spanish. And so give us a sense of that restaurant before I let you go.
Sure. So all of there. Yeah, all of our restaurants always kind of have this silver lining of Spanish cuisine. I travel to Spain pretty much every year. I love Spanish cuisine. And when we started, it was much more of a Spanish restaurant. So I think that the group just always has a little bit of Spain peppered into it. But Brasseria is 90% French. Brasserie settings are always a fun, enjoyable, a little bit more casual environment. The design of that restaurant is beautiful, but it's definitely, and I wouldn't call it very sophisticated. It's definitely an enjoyable, more comfortable restaurant, especially on the strip. You know, you deal with, especially coming in the summertime, not everyone's going to be in the suit and tie. It's going to be more, a little bit more casual. They're trying to stay cooler. So that is always welcome. We have a massive bar, 20 seat bar, more or less, with TVs. So it's pushing for people to come and enjoy themselves at a lower price point. And that's kind of the feel of a Brasserie, where you can come a couple times in a month and not, you know, pinch yourself. We have the tasting menus and all those things that if people want to come for special occasions, that's of course there. But we want it to be a little bit more approachable. The food itself, aside from that 10% of Spain, you know, the jamón, the croquetas, we always have those things. And there's definitely some dishes that are Spanish influenced that we just do like a French twist on. Like a croqueta is very famous, but we do a French croque monsieur is a very famous, almost like a ham and cheese play in a croquetta form. But the dishes itself, there's the shellfish options, there's scallops, there's oysters that we do special plays on with French ingredients built into the oysters and scallop. There's caviar options for the ones that want to splurge, whether it's more traditional or we do this caviar and egg dish. It's like almost like a parfait. You use a spoon, you scoop down out of the bottom. There's different layers of egg. There's a couple of tableside dishes. We have a steak tartare cart where we bring everything separate, go through the entire process of making our tartare. We fold bone marrow into it after we roast it tableside. So there's a little bit of fire that I have to put out occasionally with us roasting marrow tableside, which looks amazing. We're big on carts. There's a gin tonic cart. We have a champagne cart that holds a lot of our wines and with a bunch of different sparkling wine options, which is beautiful. What else? We have a couple of different other tartars, a golden tartare, which is always beets and golden beets, apple, bell pepper, Savora mustard is a French mustard, and mixed all together, it's a vegetarian version. And then there's a special grill called a Josper, or Josper or Mi Brasa is the competitor. We have Mi Brasa, which is essentially like an indoor barbecue. Gives us the ability to use wood and cook the meats. It gives this beautiful smoky aroma that honestly the strip has the ability to have, you know, afford these big grills and these expensive things. We were blessed now with this restaurant that we could put that in there. So all of our meats, we have a bunch of different steaks, pork, fishes, and a lot of them are cooked in that grill. And it's a little bit more approachable. Nothing added to those composed dishes where it's just the meat that can come to share to the table. We're all about large format sharing. So when groups come together, you can definitely order individual dishes, but you can taste more by ordering things for the table to share. And then we slice up the meats and we can share it up that way. So a little bit more forward towards like a family style dining.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Joe Mikulich. He's co-founder of EDO Hospitality. It's the restaurant group behind acclaimed dining spots, EDO Tapas, Agama by EDO, Brasseria by EDO, and La Loba. And for everything about Brasseria, go to brasseriabyedo.com. Follow them on Instagram. And Joe, thanks for being on the show.
Ira, it was a pleasure. Really good to chat with you.
Same here. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world.
Bring us your fantasy, LV. When you